It's time for overtime.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
Here we go.
And the puck is blocked. It's free.
Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Welcome in to the Tuesday edition of Overtime. Bert Ramin back here with you in the studio seats. Another beautiful day in the 605 and a pair of massive trades in the National Football League. We had the opportunity yesterday to be on the air when the Myles Garrett trade, the surprising trade, the earth-shattering blockbuster trade that sends Myles Garrett, Defensive Player of the Year, reigning Defensive Player of the Year, to Los Angeles to join the reigning MVP and Matthew Stafford, and the Rams now the favorites for the next Super Bowl. They were yesterday. They were in that hunt, top one, top two at worst, and now definitively clear-cut favorites for the Super Bowl 61 title for the LA Rams. The other trade went down yesterday afternoon, a predictable one, one that had been reported on for months. They were just waiting for the calendar to turn to June. Got all the details. AJ Brown is now a member of the New England Patriots, much to the delight of Mike Vrabel, much to the chagrin of the Buffalo Bills secondary, the Miami Dolphins, New York Jets, and more. AJ Brown, a big boost for the Patriots. Is it a big enough boost for that team to get back to the AFC title game, get back to the Super Bowl? Can the Patriots be that squad where their odds are after yesterday's trade? Are they still behind the Bills? We'll answer all those questions for you throughout today's show. Again, welcome in the Tuesday, June 2nd edition of Overtime. On today's show, headlines and highlights around the corner. Latest from the NFL, the pair of trades so far that have shaken up the league. The Green Bay Packers, according to some sources, refuted by others, the Packers are in trade talks, potentially in trade talks, for Josh Sweat, a pass rusher of the Arizona Cardinals by way of the Philadelphia Eagles. A lot of familiarity with current Packers defensive coordinator Jonathan Gannon. If Green Bay gets that deal done, that'll be great. They'll still be looking up at the LA Rams and the Seahawks and maybe a few other teams in the NFC. But Green Bay reportedly, according to some, in trade discussions there, maybe kicking the tires, making some phone calls. We will see. Packers also have a lot of questions at running back following the arrest last week of one Josh Jacobs. We set the stage for all of the NFL news of the day, a look at the odds post-Garrett trade, post-AJ Brown trade, and more. And we finish up the first hour on a Tuesday with the latest news from the NHL and the NBA as we get going with the Stanley Cup Final tonight. NBA Finals begin tomorrow night from San Antonio. Hour two, headlines and highlights. We set the stage for college softball and baseball. Just two teams remain in the college softball world. That World Series championship for college softball begins on Wednesday night, and it is an all Texas bout. Texas Tech, the 11 seed, meeting up with second seeded Texas Wednesday night, 7 o'clock. Game one, game three, if necessary, will be Friday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, all on ESPN as the conclusion of D1 college softball comes up pretty darn soon. D1 baseball also, we got our Sweet 16, if you will. The Super Regional round is set, and yes, we are lacking in area squads. Jackrabbits made a trip to the NCAA tournament. Nebraska made a trip to the NCAA tournament. Neither of those squads in, but we'll tell you what 16 teams are vying for a spot in Omaha's College World Series coming up later on this month. Minnesota Wild talk, NHL stage setter Seth Topal of Locked On Wild will join us at the end of today's show, talking about the offseason priorities for Minnesota, the rumors and rumblings surrounding big additions to an already stacked roster with Kaprizov, Matt Boldy, Quinn Hughes, and so many more. We'll set the stage, all things Minnesota Wild, in a busy offseason ahead with Seth Topol coming up at the end of the show right around 12:40. Let's dive into the scorecard. NBA Finals set to begin tomorrow night. Knicks and the Spurs, game one from San Antonio, 7:30 on ABC. Spurs are favored by 4.5 points. Here's Ian Begley, New York Knicks reporter, talking about the simple question that isn't so simple, doesn't have a simple answer. Who guards Victor Wembanyama?
I think it's probably Towns with Ananobi mixed in there. That would be my guess. They've used Ananobi on the big throughout the playoffs, really throughout his tenure as a Knick. So I wouldn't be surprised if they went to Wembanyama somewhat. But I think Towns would draw the assignment initially. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what they could do there in terms of Wembanyama. Obviously, you want to pull him out of the paint if you can on the other end of the floor, and you want to make him work defensively. And, you know, Towns, I'll say this, he's defended pretty well over the course of this postseason. So he had a bad reputation as a defender, but defended solidly in the playoffs. And I think he will see some time on Wembanyama.
There you go. Carl Anthony Towns, OG Anunoby, primary defenders of one Victor Wembanyama. This is a really intriguing series because, no doubt about it, the big advantage, disadvantage, tilt here goes to San Antonio in terms of Victor Wembanyama just being an otherworldly alien-style problem. Incredible puzzle to figure out and likely not going to figure it out from a Knicks perspective. That being said, can New York do enough outside of that big matchup, big problem, to win the series? Up for debate, San Antonio, a marginal favorite, and a marginal favorite in game one tomorrow night. 4.5 points the spread right now at DraftKings Sportsbook. Stanley Cup final was set tonight from Raleigh. It'll be rocking. Canes home to the Golden Knights. Game one, 7 o'clock on ABC. Carolina remains a sizable favorite, -155 on the puck line in game number one. Yesterday's Major League Baseball finals, Detroit beat Tampa 10-9. Tigers still working their way out of the cellar with a record of 23-38. Kansas City also won yesterday in Cincy 9-2. Royals are 23-37. Twins are 5 games better than those two squads, as just like everyone thought. But Minnesota scored a big win yesterday, 9-6 over the visiting Chicago White Sox. One big reason why they were on the winning side was a grand slam from Tristan Gray. Here's Gray on that crack of the bat and what it meant in the win yesterday.
Yeah, I think I watched his, well, first the first at bat he attacked me with 2 curveballs. I flew out, and I think last week against Davis Martin got me out with curveballs, or at least I was chasing to get behind. And then earlier in the game, he threw, I think, 3 in a row to Brooks. So I was kind of looking forward, thinking that was his game plan, especially with runs in scoring position.
Pretty mature approach there for Tristan Gray on a big grand slam. Here's Joe Ryan on his outing. A winning affair moves his record to 4-3, but Ryan not really happy with his performance yesterday.
Yeah, I don't feel like I gave enough length today. I think there's some other things that could have gone differently, and trying to just probably mix things up when we didn't need to be doing that, and adding things in that we haven't done all year, and just kind of changing the plan at times. And I think it just limits the innings there. I think I was probably in a spot to go a couple more innings, and just certain things didn't go the way that we probably should have stuck to.
Joe Ryan with the latest win, now 4-3 on the season with a 3.20 ERA. Twins manager Derek Shelton, plain and simply, just a good win yesterday to open up a series.
Good win to get back in front of our home fans and play a good baseball game. We did a lot of things well, had some big timely hits, but overall, good win for us.
Twins manager Derek Shelton, Minnesota with the 9-6 win yesterday, moves their record to 28-33. Milwaukee all over San Francisco yesterday, 16-2. Brewers remaining one of the hottest teams in baseball. New record is 36-21. Elsewhere, Texas beat St. Louis in St. Louis 2-1. Rockies get a road win in L.A. against the Angels 9-8. Today and tonight in Major League Baseball, Tigers and Rays get us going from Tampa at 5:40. Other matchups on the way, Guardians at Yankees, Royals at the Reds, White Sox and Twins do it again from Target Field. 6:40 the start time, 6 o'clock pregame coverage right here on the Treasure Island Baseball Network. Other matchups, Giants at Brewers, Rangers at Cardinals, Cubs open up a series at home against the visiting A's, Rockies and the Angels, the nightcap, an 8:30 projected Start time. NASCAR racing, the race this weekend coming up at Michigan. Coverage Sunday, 2 o'clock on Prime Video and on HBO. And let's get into the NFL drama. In all caps, bolded, underlined, and highlighted yesterday, two massive trades, one of which we saw coming, and it was a foregone conclusion. So we thought. I speculated a bit, maybe, with the Vrabel-Rossini situation, maybe that might fall through because Vrabel might have been persona non grata in Foxborough. That's not true. They move forward with the trade. They get A.J. Brown and the deal done. But the surprising trade that went down first yesterday sends arguably the best defensive player in the National Football League and arguably the most important and impactful player in the league at any position to the best team in the NFL. Myles Garrett heading to the L.A. Rams. Lot of different opinions here. Chris Canty, though, going contrarian, saying, I like Cleveland's chances to also win this trade.
The Browns have a better chance of winning this trade than the Rams do. I know it's wild to think of it in these terms because how could you ever bet on Cleveland doing right by all of these draft picks? But if you look at their drafts the last couple of years, they've hit on a lot of picks. And now you're adding to the coffers to the tune of having 11 draft picks in 2027 in what will be a quarterback-rich draft. And the biggest riddle for this team to solve has been the quarterback room and stabilizing that position. They'll have all the ammunition they'll ever need in order to do that in 2027. The win for the Cleveland Browns is finding a franchise quarterback. For the LA Rams, the only way they win this trade is if they win a Super Bowl with Matt Stafford as their quarterback, if they win another.
That's true. The only way the Rams come out smelling like a rose here is if they win it all. There's no other doubt about it. When it comes down to the timeline is currently constructed, it is Matthew Stafford, Puka Nacua, Davante Adams, Myles Garrett. That is the core right now. We can talk about Ty Simpson and the future of the LA Rams moving forward, but right now this team is going backwards and embracing that bleep those picks mentality from just 3-4 years ago when they did win a Super Bowl in year one after another blockbuster deal in which they acquired Matthew Stafford for a bunch of picks and some crumpled up piece of trash quarterback named Jared Goff, who, to his credit, has been pretty darn good as a throw-in to that trade for the Detroit Lions. Now, more from Canty here on the other piece that's not being talked about. If you recall, just a year ago, not even a year ago, Micah Parsons shipped up to Green Bay. Packers said a 2026 first-round pick, a 2027 first-round pick, and an aging veteran, Kenny Clark, at interior defensive line. Now, yesterday, we saw the Browns receive a first-rounder, a second rounder and a third rounder in successive years, and a premium blue chip pass rusher, young player, 25-year-old Jared Verse, who Canty says don't sleep on him. He's a massive building block as well.
I think it was the right decision for Cleveland. They got a player that won Defensive Rookie of the Year, has been in the Pro Bowl his first 2 years in the league. He's got two more years under his rookie deal. And you've got the fifth-year option if you choose to exercise it. I think it's outstanding for them to be able to get a player at that same position that has the potential to be an all-pro. That's the ceiling for Jared Verse. So I like that. He's a building block piece for your defense. Doesn't have the same ceiling as Miles, but he is absolutely a building block piece. He's going to be a guy that's highly productive player for a decade plus.
That's Chris Canty on Jared Verse, an unheralded part of the trade yesterday. Again, a 2027 first rounder, 2028 second rounder, 2029 third round pick, and Jared Verse, who's a really good ascending young pass rusher in his own right. Is he going to be Myles Garrett? No. Nobody is. Really, frankly, Myles Garrett, in my opinion, is the best pass rusher in the league, regardless of age. Micah Parsons is in the conversation. Max Crosby's in the conversation. There's a few others, and you can certainly insert your name if you'd like to. But Micah Parsons is, at worst, the second best pass rusher in the NFL right now, and I don't believe that he is number two right now, even at a quote-unquote advanced age of 30. Now, David Dennis Jr. saying what many people had already thought yesterday before the trade, the Rams are the best team in the NFL, and after the trade, they definitely are right now.
This is the NFL's Luka Doncic trade, and not just because of the shock value, because of the way that it just reshapes how we look at the league. Like, it changes the balance of power in the league by putting maybe the NFL's best player on maybe the NFL's best team and making a true legitimate, like the Rams right now feel like the 90s Cowboys.
There you go. David Dennis Jr. talking about those LA Rams. I will push back on one thing. The Luka Doncic trade was shocking, crazy. Oh my gosh, I can't believe they moved that guy. And you could say that in regards to the Browns and Myles Garrett. But when you look at it, Cleveland has been flirting with slash being bad enough that this has been talked about for years. They need to move Myles Garrett. They need to move Myles Garrett. When are they going to trade Joe Thomas? When are they going to trade Joe Thomas? They got these guys that stick it out in Cleveland, never win a game, and everybody loves them. Myles Garrett has been very quiet in his requests in the past of, I would like a trade. And then he was pretty vocal last year, got a boatload of money, and then went and played ball to the tune of 23 sacks and an NFL record. Now, this offseason, the Browns front office thinks it might be time. They get an offer that they can't refuse. They take a pretty sizable downgrade, but still have a very fearsome pass rusher coming in Jared Verse and load up on future picks. I like the return here, which in the Luka Doncic trade, the return is gone. It's over. It's done with. It feels like a grand theft robbery when it comes down to what they got in return for Luka Doncic and the Lakers. Now, it hasn't worked out in a title for LA yet, and that's a different story. But the shock and awe of, oh my gosh, they traded Luka was also accentuated by, wait, what did they get? That's all they got for Luka Doncic? What are they doing? And it was a absolute roast of Nico Harrison there in the wake of that trade. So this is not viewed that way. You could say that the Browns lost the trade if you have a strong opinion there. I don't really think that they did just yet. Time will tell, as it always does. But they got a lot of value in return yesterday. First rounder, second rounder, third rounder, and a future all-pro pass rusher in Jared Verse. Lastly here, moving on to the A.J. Brown trade in the NFL. Damian Woody talking about the Philadelphia Eagles offense after they ship A.J. Brown out to Foxborough to be a Patriot.
As we sit here in June, I'm hard-pressed to think that's going to be better. A.J. Brown is, listen, for all the noise that's come out of the Philadelphia locker room, A.J. Brown, by those stats that we show, was one of the best wide receivers in the National Football League. He was a guy that when everything hit the fan, Jalen Hurts could go locate him and go make a play. Now you take him out of the equation. What is this offense going to be? This offense is going to look a lot different. It's going to look a lot more of Jalen Hurts underneath center. It's going to have his back to the defense. It's going to play a lot more between the numbers. Because a lot of the passing game with the Philadelphia Eagles with A.J. Brown was outside the numbers. That's what they were doing. And so now we got to think, okay, is Jalen Hurts going to be comfortable doing something that he really hasn't been doing throughout his whole career? And now you've taken away a 1A and alpha wide receiver in A.J. Brown.
That's Damian Woody on the A.J. Brown trade. Now for Adam Schefter talking about how long this has been in the works. Mike Vrabel and A.J. Brown's friendship and mentorship is well noted. Talk about the history between the two. Here's Adam Schefter.
Mike Vrabel never wanted to trade A.J. Brown away in Tennessee. Yeah. So he gets back the wide receiver that he wanted and needed. The Eagles get back two picks. But the hidden value of the deal is that it also frees up about $30 million for the Philadelphia Eagles. So everybody says only two first-round picks for a player who's put up as good a numbers as Ja'Marr Chase over the last 4 years. Yeah, but the Eagles also get to spend $30-plus million and make trades like the one they did on the second night of the draft for Jonathan Greenard, which wouldn't have been possible if they didn't know that they were trading A.J. Brown.
And again, the details there before we move on, A.J. Brown to the Patriots for a first round pick, not next year, but in 2028 and a 2027 next year, fifth round pick. So that's right. You get rid of an all-pro caliber wide receiver, a guy that's a game breaker feared by many in the league and A.J. Brown. And you don't get anything other than the fifth round pick for more than a year. You do get a first rounder in 2028. That's a long time to wait, though, for A.J. Brown. I think initially you can have your opinion, but initially I think the Rams won the Browns trade just a smidgen, and then initially the Patriots definitely got better right away from the trade for A.J. Brown. We'll see exactly how that shakes out moving forward. That's all for the NFL for now. Dedicated NFL segment coming up here pretty darn soon. Update from the French Open on the women's side. Yesterday, under the lights, top-seeded Aryna Sabalenka took down Naomi Osaka 7-5, 6-3. Earlier on today, it was Marta Kostyuk defeating Alina Svitolina 6-3, 2-6, 6-2. And Mira Andreeva, the 8th seed, defeating 18th seed Sarana Kirsty 6-0, 6-3. Yesterday on the men's side, Matteo Arnaldi defeated the lone American man remaining remaining in the field. 19-seeded Francis Tiafoe goes down in a 5-set thriller. Matteo Arnaldi moving on. And today, live right now, Alexander Zverev taking on 27th-rated Rafael Jodar. And then number 26, Jakub Mensik taking on Yao Fonseca at 1:15 this afternoon. On the men's side, D1 softball Women's College World Series yesterday, we had two teams with their backs against the wall. One of them was Texas. They entered yesterday with one loss already in a double elimination tournament. They had to beat Tennessee two times, and they did. Texas beating the Vols 5-2 in game one, 4-0 in game two. So Texas is on to the World Series championship that starts on Wednesday. The other team is Texas Tech. How about those Red Raiders? They were the 11 seed, battling top-seeded Alabama already with a loss. They beat Bama 5-4 in game one and then did it again in game two, a 2-0 final.
Nyjah's 99th pitch of this second game, her 156th pitch of the day. Line to right field, all Reds there. Texas Tech and Texas are set for a rematch. The Red Raiders and the Longhorns survive one of the wildest days in World Series history.
Talk about the underdogs, the teams that were not favored to get out of yesterday did just that. Texas Tech over Alabama, Texas over Tennessee, and it is a Texas-sized championship best-of-three series starting on Wednesday. Red Raiders, Longhorns, 7 o'clock Wednesday night for Game 1 on ESPN. And an update, we'll give you a bigger update later. D1 Baseball Super Regional Round is set, which means we're down to 16 teams, best-of-three series, and a lot of great teams featured. We'll dive into all of that. Look at the bracket later on in the show. Let's dive into your ReliaBank headlines of the day for hour number one. We start up in Brookings. South Dakota State softball head coach Christina McSweeney has announced a staffing change. Announced yesterday that current grad assistant and program alum Rosalind Carrillo has been hired to fill the Jackrabbits assistant coach position. Carrillo served as a GA over the course of the past 2 years. Her graduate assistant role followed her 4-year standout career with the Jackrabbits that ran from 2021 through 2024. The Palmdale, California native stepped onto campus as a freshman in the fall of 2020, made her debut in yellow and blue during the 2021 season, and was a phenomenal player. Really nice GA, and then now into an assistant coach position. Job well done. Congratulations, Rosalind Carrillo, a new assistant coach for Jackrabbit softball. The University of Sioux Falls Athletic Department and head women's soccer coach Andy Jansen have announced the hiring of John Moning as an assistant coach for the Cougar women's soccer program. Moning brings an extensive coaching background, according to USFCougars.com, with a proven track record in player development. Moning arrives at USF after serving as the women's assistant coach, goalkeeper coach, and recruiting coordinator at St. Olaf College since 2022, full details and a new bio on the new assistant coach for USF Women's Soccer, USFCougars.com. And lastly, we close the book on hour number one's ReliaBank headlines of the day with this news from Ames. Former Iowa State forward Milan Momcilovic, the number one player in the transfer portal this spring, has announced his commitment to another Blue Blood program, the Kentucky Wildcats. Momcilovic chose Kentucky over Louisville and Arizona. St. John's was also among the schools in pursuit as recently as last week, but the Red Storm bowed out after landing Baylor transfer Tunde Yusufu. Momcilovic, 6'8", best shooter in college basketball last year for TJ Otzelberger and the Cyclones, averaged 17 points per game, shot an NCAA best 49% from three, ranking 5th nationally in three-pointers made, and he is now a member of the Kentucky Wildcat men's basketball program. Those are your ReliaBank headlines of the day for hour number one. As always, for a better local banking option, check them out online at ReliaBank.com or in person right here in the 605. We will take a break when we come back. Don't sleep on the NFL. You can't afford to any day on the calendar. Yesterday was not a day to miss. We got a lot of news, a lot of nuggets, and a lot of debate to fire up coming up here soon. Who won the trades yesterday? Myles Garrett to the Rams. Browns load up on draft picks, get a little cheaper, a little leaner. Eagles ship off A.J. Brown. Who could have seen that coming? Finally, we lay to bed that drama. And now the bullseye's on Jalen Hurts. Can he perform without an alpha wide receiver? Because I don't believe Devontae Smith is an alpha. Call me crazy. We'll see about Mekhi Lemon, Devontae Smith, Dontavian Wicks, and more in Philly, but you lose A.J. Brown and no immediate return just yet in Philadelphia. That and more coming up next on Overtime.
Get ESPN with the free app and online. Grab your phone or call us up on your smart device. Now let's get you back to Overtime with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO.
Just getting going on this Tuesday, June 2nd edition of Overtime. A reminder later on this week, the identity crisis on a Wednesday. We got the Friday parlay making a comeback on Friday, as well as the high noon showdown, opportunities to win all week long here on Overtime. And if you ever miss any of the show, an hour, a segment, an interview you want to listen back to, podcast links are easy to find, ESPNSiouxFalls.com or on the free ESPN Sioux Falls mobile app. Well, let's get right to it. A dedicated NFL segment right now in early June. What the heck happened yesterday? Well, a lot did. Not usually a holiday in the NFL, but the post-June 1st designation is important for contract structure. If you got guaranteed money or money that needs to be on the books, if you do it post-June 1, you can spread the cap hit, the dead cap, out across multiple seasons. That's the real line of demarcation. So pre-June 1st, if you cut somebody back in March and it's a pre-June 1st designation, you got to eat that dead cap this coming season, all of it. Now, post-June 1st, designation of trade, release, cut, etc., get out of town, you can spread over 2 years, and that's what the Eagles were waiting on to say so long to A.J. Brown. So now we've got a new burgeoning, budding holiday in the NFL. I think this is the thing here to stay. Post-June 1st, contract flexibility opens up for massaging and maneuvering money into two different years instead of just one. And I think we're going to start to see this as a secondary trade deadline, really a trade start line in the NFL offseason. That's what we saw yesterday, and we'll get to the Browns trade first here. The Cleveland Browns traded two-time NFL Defensive Player of the Year Myles Garrett to the Rams for two-time Pro Bowl pass rusher Jared Verse and multiple draft picks. Here's the compensation update. The Browns received a first-rounder next year, second-round pick in 2028, and a third-rounder in 2029, and what is one of the biggest trades in NFL history involving a defensive player. Garrett, in a social media post, thanked the Browns and their fans, saying the city of Cleveland shaped him and, quote, made me tougher, adding this is the best days of this franchise are ahead. Certainly they can't go anywhere but up, to be fair. Poking fun, of course, but nice sentiment from Myles Garrett on the way out the door, saying, loving you is easy, leaving you is the hard part. The shocking trade is completely on brand for the Rams, according to ESPN.com, who made a similarly seismic move back in 2021 when they acquired quarterback Matthew Stafford in the season in which the Super Bowl was being played in L.A. before going on to win it. Now, there was a lot of vitriol and a lot of weirdness around that team. They traded away just about every asset that they had for years to make that trade happen, and then continued to be very, very aggressive in retention and going to grab other players on the market, free agency, draft picks, or otherwise. And the Rams found their way to a Super Bowl. And the question here is it worth it? And the answer is absolutely it is. Of course, everybody wants to build a dynasty and win 3 Super Bowls in 5 years or 8 Super Bowls in 15 years or whatever it might be. But the fact of the matter is, the nature of the business is go and win a Super Bowl and you'll get a big contract. Your coaches will get big contracts. Your players will earn more money. Everybody will be happy and you'll get some more job security. So for the Rams here, they're now 4 years removed from winning that Super Bowl and they're doing it again. And they're pairing up the elite coach that they have in Sean McVay. That's not up for debate. At worst, McVay is a fifth best coach in the league right now. I would say north of that, top three. And you could argue whatever preference you have for coaches, but they got an elite coach. Got an elite GM by many metrics in Les Snead. Quarterback, elite, swan song of his career, absolutely. Still playing at an absurdly high level, fresh off an MVP year, his first MVP season. We don't really know what kind of track he has in front of him. If this is it, if there's 2 years, he's got 2 years left on a deal. That does not mean he's going to be there, play there, and extend the career there. This could be it for Matthew Stafford. If they win it all this year, maybe it's thanks so much, I'm riding off into the sunset. Or maybe it's two more years max for Matthew Stafford. He's had some injury concerns, back, etc. recently, but I feel like he's still really darn good. Now, Davante Adams, swan song of his career. Puka Nacua has had a rocky boat start to his career, but an amazing start. But we'll see exactly what he ends up being and how long he can stay atop the NFL best receiver list. Top five, top 10, easy for Puka Nacua. And then, of course, you got solid running backs behind him. Trent McDuffie on the secondary side. That was the biggest glaring issue of the Rams defense was secondary last year. They addressed that via trade before the NFL draft. They take Ty Simpson at pick 13. Everybody's saying, what is my team doing? We got to win now. And then they do this yesterday and go and get the reigning NFL Defensive Player of the Year, every offensive coordinator's item 1A anytime they played the Browns. And I know we joke around about Cleveland and, oh my gosh, they got the Browns. That's a win. Might be, but you got to deal with Myles Garrett. Game record. Just ask the Green Bay Packers who lost to the Browns last year because of Myles Garrett and that Brown defensive line, and the issues that they had protecting Jordan Love from Garrett, and the impact that he had on the other side of the football field. He's an absolute problem, a menace, 23 sacks last year, and the Rams get that much better. While we're on the subject here of the LA Rams, entering yesterday, the Rams and Seahawks were right about on par with each other, plus 750, plus 800, depending upon your preference, it was one way or another atop the NFL Super Bowl 61 odds. Now the Rams, predictably, are the outright favorites, and it's a very sizable margin, plus 600 for LA. The Bills and Ravens follow at plus 1,000. Seahawks plus 1,100. Chiefs plus 1,500 are fifth. Eagles, Patriots, Chargers, Packers, Niners, rounding out the top 10. By the way, got to say it's absurd that there's two new coaches in the top three. Buffalo new coach, Baltimore new coach, and they're in the top three Super Bowl odds. Yes, the NFL feels a little bit more predictable this year than most because I would say it would be prudent and wise to say the Rams are going to win the Super Bowl. Every year is so different. It's rare that we get a prognostication where somebody hits the nail right on the head. Outside of the dynasties of the Patriots and the Chiefs, it's been pretty hard to predict what teams get there. Just look at last year. Nobody was saying Seattle Super Bowl. People might be saying, oh, I like their acquisitions. If Darnold works out and if this works out and if that goes their way, maybe they'll be a playoff team. Playoffs. Seahawks made it happen. Patriots came out of nowhere. I pounded the table this time last year and said they're going to win 7, 8, 9, 10 games. Maybe. That felt bold. They get to the Super Bowl. Nothing is a guarantee, but the Rams certainly tightened up their grip and reinforced their team talent-wise for the very short term, particularly the short term reference to Stafford. I still think Garrett's got a long career ahead if he wants it. 5, 6, 7 years if he wants it at that pass rush spot. But that is a massive win, massive trade for the Rams. And for the Cleveland Browns, you got to like that they finally got the deal done before the clock struck zero. Myles Garrett is still insanely good, probably coming off of the peak season of his career. And I say probably because he's had very impactful seasons in the past, not with 23 sacks, but a dude that continues to rumble his way through a career that has been storybook to start in a non-storybook location. Great career so far for Myles Garrett. And the Browns get Jared Verse, who many people would tell you before yesterday, and he was lumped in on a trade. Many people would say, hey, who's the best young pass rusher in the NFL? Give me five names to know. Jared Verse is on that list yesterday, people. Absolutely. He is. Not a game wrecker, not a, oh, we got to stop Jared Verse just yet, but certainly could be one of those guys in near term. And the Browns also get three premium picks. Premium, usually say rounds 1 through 3. Browns get three of those in three successive years and an opportunity for several cracks at the bat to get better, find a quarterback, find the coach that makes the thing work. They hope they have him in Todd Monken. Year number one is just about underway for him. And we'll see where the Browns go with this. Everything's going to come out in retrospect. We're still figuring out who won the Micah Parsons Cowboys trade, other big trades out there in the NFL. But this trade is going to be interesting on numerous levels. Could be a win-win if the Browns find their quarterback, get to the playoffs, have some sustained success. They've had a few years where they pinged up with Derek Anderson, with Baker Mayfield, with Joe Flacco in the playoffs. The Browns got there. but they've never been able to sustain that since the year 1999, where they made their way back into the NFL with Tim Couch. But the Cleveland Browns looking for some consistency. They could also win that trade. General Manager Andrew Berry saying yesterday, the team required premium draft assets and a young elite player back in any deal in order to preserve their short-term and long-term goals. Here's what Berry had to say in terms of why now. The opportunity was too great. Wasn't like a plan A going into the offseason. Quite honestly, we would have operated differently if it was. Sometimes things come across your path and you're not expecting them. You can't be so dogmatic in your strategy and planning that you can't adjust and be flexible. And finally, the Browns give Myles Garrett some room to breathe, an opportunity to win, and they get a relative blockbuster return in exchange. Not multiple ones, but a 1-2 and a 3 and a premium player, premium young 25-year-old player in Jared Verse. Now, with that news, one other interesting tidbit from Pro Football Talk: with reigning NFL Defensive Player of the Year, Myles Garrett, joining reigning league MVP Matthew Stafford, the 2026 Rams are already occupying a unique place in NFL history. This year's team is the first to have both the prior season's MVP at quarterback and the previous season's Defensive Player of the Year on the roster as well. Stafford and Garrett won the league's most two prestigious on-field awards for the past season. That makes the first time that any team has done that. Technically, two teams have had the both reigning MVP and Defensive Player of the Year, as two players have both won MVP and Defensive Player of the Year in the same season. Vikings defensive lineman Alan Page won both awards in 71, and the first year the AP Defensive Player of the Year award was given, Giants linebacker Lawrence Taylor, LT, won both awards in 86. But the first team to have two separate players winning those awards is the Rams as of yesterday. The other big trade that went down yesterday, also a topsy-turvy opinion weighted here: AJ Brown going from the Eagles to the New England Patriots. This one was writing on the wall, wasn't officially official, but anytime Schefter puts out the banner and says this is likely to happen, you got to roll with it. AJ Brown to the Patriots for a first round pick, not next year, but 2028, and a 2027 fifth rounder. The fifth round selection will be the better of New England's two picks in that round of next year's draft. The trade, which has been discussed and anticipated across the NFL for months, reunites A.J. Brown and Patriots coach Mike Vrabel. In a statement posted to Instagram, Brown thanked Eagles fans and the organization. Praying for this city, playing for this city has been an honor, and I'm thankful for every moment I had in Midnight Green. Thank you, Philly. Much love always. God bless. A frustrating end, a tumultuous time in Philadelphia, which included a lot of carrots on the finger via Super Bowl ring for A.J. Brown and the Eagles, but it was a weird last couple of years. You know, reading the book on the sideline, mum is the word, very few ruffled feathers, pun included, loud moments, but there was a lot of unease and weird locker room drama in Philadelphia, and some of that was centered up on A.J. Brown. Other things were centered up on Jalen Hurts, and I'm very interested to see what Philly does from here. You get the sense, another great general manager front office is Howie Roseman in the Philadelphia Eagles. You get the sense they're going to parlay this into something else this offseason, whether it's Josh Sweat reacquisition in the days to come from the Arizona Cardinals, or if it's a different playmaker that might be available out there that fits the team right now. Eagles have been aggressive, not Rams-esque aggressive, but they've been very aggressive in terms of trades, free agency, draft, etc. Would not surprise me at all if Philadelphia goes out and makes a move in the here and now, because this trade is not a here and now move, not a here and now trade at all. It's a 2028 first rounder and a 2027 fifth rounder. With respect to fifth round picks out there, that's a crumple up, throw it away, who cares? The signature piece in the trade is a first round pick, but it's not for another year plus away for the Philadelphia Eagles to get immediate feedback and return on this trade. And it makes the Eagles offense look absurdly different. It's going to run through the running game, Saquon Barkley, Tank Bigsby, Jalen Hurts, and then extend to the tight ends, Dallas Goedert, Eli Stowers, the rookie. And then you're going to talk about the not the deep ball, not the high point football up to A.J. Brown in desperation or a big moment. That's gone now with A.J. Brown out of town. You got Devontae Smith, a.k.a. the Slim Reaper, elite nickname, crossing route specialist, a guy that can certainly pile up some yards after the catch. But then you bring in Mekhi Lemon, who is also a route runner, over-the-middle kind of guy. This offense is going to be a lot smaller, a lot shorter, probably equally as good, but just a lot different in Philadelphia as A.J. Brown is moving on to Foxborough. Lastly here, Russell Wilson. This is an interesting debate yesterday. He is finalizing a deal to become a CBS sports analyst. According to ESPN's Adam Schefter yesterday, Wilson, who also had an offer on the table from the Jets to join the team as a backup to Geno Smith, says, no, thank you. I'm going to go to the booth. Wilson, a 10-time Pro Bowl selection, won a Super Bowl and the prestigious Walter Payton Man of the Year Award during his career, now is set to leave the NFL as a player to become an analyst on the network's pregame show that includes James Brown, Nate Burleson, and former Steeler head coach Bill Cowher. Since his debut in 2012, Russell Wilson has thrown the third most touchdowns in the NFL during that time span. Now, it brings up a very interesting debate here. There's a lot of strong opinions based on Russell Wilson, of course, personality-wise. Try to let that go out of your mind here when you listen to this clip. Here is Peter Schrager talking about Russell Wilson and his Hall of Fame candidacy. Is Russell Wilson a Hall of Famer?
He was a 10-time Pro Bowler. Every other quarterback who's been a 10-time Pro Bowler is securely in the Hall of Fame. So you would say yes. But those 10 Pro Bowls happened at a point of his career where he was never first-team All-Pro. He was never the MVP. He had one of the best defenses ever surrounding him. And since those years, it has been such a drop-off and such a demise in Denver, nothing in Pittsburgh, and really nothing with that year in the Giants, where I could see voters almost talking themselves out of putting Russell Wilson in the Hall of Fame. So it's a fascinating candidacy. I don't think he's first ballot, but I think he certainly has an argument to get in it.
And it's crazy. You think about the one play that defined his career was the throw to Ricardo Lockett instead of the handoff to the dude that they called beast mode in the backfield in the Super Bowl against the Patriots. Malcolm Butler picks it off. Patriots win yet again. If they complete that pass or just hand it off to Marshawn Lynch two times, that's a touchdown. That's a Super Bowl win. That's two Super Bowls in, what, his first 3 years in the league? That would have been an amazing start to the career. Instead, it's one Super Bowl for Russ. All sorts of Pro Bowl appearances, steady Eddie, never the best quarterback in the league, probably never the best quarterback in the NFC, maybe not in his division for a very long time. But Russ won 121 games out of the 202 that he played, 202 that he started in the league, piled up double-digit wins for five consecutive years, including eight of his first nine seasons. And the 1 year he didn't have double-digit wins, he was 9-7. So great consistency. The issue here is the final 5 years have been anything but good for Russell Wilson. His final year in Seattle, they were 6-8, threw 25 touchdown passes. First year in Denver, disaster, 4-11. And if you remember that team, they couldn't even get a playoff. Every single time they came to the line, the play call was slow. Nathaniel Hackett fired. Disaster, train wreck. Year number two in Denver, Sean Payton comes in. They just did not get along, see eye to eye, whatever. 7-8 the record that year for Russ. In Pittsburgh, not great. 6-5 the record, 16 touchdowns to 5 picks. And then the Giants last year, 0-3, and did not look good. So the fizzle, the burn, the descent, the rapid descent of Russell Wilson really tanks his candidacy. If you had to tell me the guys that we've put in at quarterback versus the guys that were waiting, Phillip Rivers, Eli Manning, of course, there's others out there waiting. I feel like Russ has a really, really good resume, but the end of the career is just a sour note for Russell Wilson because it became the last 3, 4, 5 years of his career, Russ is out of gas. He's got nothing left. And that kind of lived up to that. There were very few games in the last 3, 4, 5 years of Russ's career that you said, that's the Russell Wilson we used to see. Felt like he ran out of gas pretty darn early, but that first 8, 10 years of his career, my goodness, was he very, very good for a nice long time. Not just a thrower, but a runner, hyper-mobile, hyper-intelligent quarterback as well. Very interesting debate there for the Hall of Fame candidacy of one Russell Wilson, joining CBS Sports as part of a pre-game show this coming season. That's the latest from the NFL. When we come back, it's a quick toe dip into the latest news out of the NHL and NBA. Reset the odds one final time before action gets going tonight from Raleigh, home of the Carolina Hurricanes, home to the Vegas Golden Knights. A look at that series, the odds, NBA news as well, and a last look at the odds before game one of the finals between the Knicks and Spurs from San Antonio tomorrow night. That's next on a Tuesday edition of Overtime.
Studios.
Overtime is in the middle of your workday. Unwrap your sandwich and get caught up with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
It's a busy hour number one on a Tuesday edition of Overtime. A reminder, tomorrow on the program, stay tuned. Some T-Wolves talk as well as the identity crisis. First opportunity to win big, including some Minnesota Twins tickets up for grabs tomorrow. Let's talk hockey here quickly. Tonight, we'll see the start of the Stanley Cup Final, Golden Knights and the Hurricanes. A little did you know, Vegas, one of the better expansion teams in recent memory in any league. This is their third Stanley Cup Final. Been around for just 9 years. And for Carolina, it's been a very successful venture. As somebody that spent a lot of time in that state, went to high school, graduated high school, somehow in a Raleigh suburb, I can tell you it's kind of odd that in the South there, in North Carolina, they've got the Carolina Panthers over there in Charlotte. They got the Charlotte Hornets, Charlotte Bobcats of the past there in Charlotte. And then in Raleigh, of all places, wonderful town. If you ever had the opportunity to visit, hour and a half from the beach, really great town, all sorts of amazing things they got going on there. Part of Tobacco Road, great center there for Duke, UNC, NC State, Wake Forest over there in Winston. But beautiful area. The fact that they have an NHL team in Raleigh felt like a giant leap of faith when they first burst onto the scene as the former Hartford Whalers. Now, in 06, they had some dude named Rod Brind'Amour help them win a Stanley Cup title. That was the last time they've been there. For Carolina, they've made a lot of big runs, a lot of magic moments, especially lately. They've been pretty darn good. One of the elite franchises over the last 2, 3, 4 years in the NHL, but they finally get over the hump back into the Stanley Cup final for the first time in 20 years there in Raleigh. And I got to tell you, my bleeding heart is out to the Carolina Hurricanes. I think they find a way to get the job done. Plus, it helps that I got a nice, healthy hatred of Vegas because of the Colorado Avalanche, the Minnesota Wild, and the other Western Conference teams that we cover all the time, always bowing down, it seems, to Vegas or Dallas or somebody like that. So we'll see tonight, game one, Golden Knights and Hurricanes from Raleigh, 7 o'clock on ABC, a raucous environment. And, of course, Vegas is on the Canes, minus 155 this morning on the puck line. And if you look at the NHL tab at ESPN.com, it is a not even split, but a healthy split among all of the NHL personalities that were polled here. We're talking Mark Messier, P.K. Subban, T.J. Oshie, Greg Wyshynski, Bob Wyshusen, all the big names, John Buchegross. Between Vegas and Hurricanes, it is a pretty healthy split. Little bit more on Carolina, 6 or 7 games, but a lot of respect for Vegas and what they've been able to do with Coach Tortorella lately has them feeling pretty good as well. Carolina favored in the series, but should be a good one, I hope, 6 or 7 games. And in the end, would like it for my North Carolina-based friends to get a title for the Carolina Hurricanes there in Raleigh. The Vancouver Canucks didn't have to go far to find their new head coach, Manny Malhotra, who spent the past 2 seasons as the coach of the Canucks AHL affiliate, was promoted to lead the NHL team yesterday. Malhotra, whose father is from India, is believed to be the first head coach of South Asian descent in NHL league history. Promoting Malhotra, who played 3 seasons for Vancouver, is the latest personnel move for an organization that is elected to look inward for help during one of the most challenging periods in the club's history. The 46-year-old got his first coaching job back in 2016, and as of yesterday, is the head coach of the Vancouver Canucks. Over to the basketball world, Rick Adelman, a Basketball Hall of Fame inductee who played for 7 NBA seasons before becoming one of the game's all-time winningest coaches, passed away as of yesterday, according to the National Basketball Coaches Association. Adelman, of course, who is the father of current Nuggets coach David Adelman, was 79 years old. The cause of death not immediately announced. Rick Adelman won 1,042 games as a coach in the NBA, 10th most in league history. Only 4 other coaches, pretty good ones, Pat Riley, Greg Popovich, Jerry Sloan, and George Karl, coached more games and had a better winning percentage than Adelman, who took the Blazers to the NBA Finals twice and was also head coach in Sacramento, Houston, Minnesota, and Golden State. Rest in peace, Rick Adelman, passing yesterday at the age of 79. And lastly, from the NBA, for now, Spurs favored by 4.5, tomorrow night for game one of the NBA Finals. Team Canada's taking shape. Canadian men's basketball team announced a group of players highlighted by two-time NBA MVP SGA, who will serve as the initial roster for the national team in the upcoming FIBA World Cup in 2027 and the subsequent 2028 Summer Olympics. Qualifiers for the World Cup begin next month, with Canada set to face Puerto Rico and Jamaica in Ontario. Another qualifier will be held in Quebec City on August 31st. SGA will be joined on Team Canada by Lou Dort, RJ Barrett, Dylan Brooks, Benedict Mathurin, and Nikhil Alexander Walker so far on Team Canada. That's the latest news from the NBA and the NHL, and that quickly concludes hour number one on a Tuesday edition of the show. When we come back, right back into your headlines and highlights centered up on the opinion surrounding the Myles Garrett trade to the LA Rams. Are we doomed? Do we already know what team is going to win Super Bowl 61? Or do you have some confidence out there that your team or some team can upset the apple cart, aka the Matthew Stafford, Sean McVay, Kyron Williams, Davante Adams, Puka Nacua, Myles Garrett-led Los Angeles Rams? We'll dive right into that news item and all of the audio accompanied by the headlines and highlights, college softball, baseball update, and Minnesota Wild and NHL offseason talk with Seth Topol of Locked On Wild, all underway. Hour number two coming up next on a Tuesday edition of Overtime right here on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO.